content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Diane Edelman for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Reader's Digest. Today's program is supported by the Durham Lions Club. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Reader's Digest. We have one long article today from the National Interest column, How Not to Waste 11,849 Human Organs. Everything has to go right for a life-saving transplant to happen. Too often, the system makes it impossible. By Dan Schwartz. One Sunday, 66-year-old Brian Benedom's heart stops. It takes paramedics 25 minutes to get it beating again. He is unconscious, eyes closed, with a breathing tube taped to his mouth by the time his older brother, David Benedom, reaches the emergency department at Mercy San Juan Medical Center in Carmichael, California. After speaking with the doctor, David understands that Brian, who had lived with Parkinson's disease for years, is gone. But doctors can be wrong, he thinks. By morning, however, an electroencephalogram reveals minimal electrical activity in Brian's brain. He isn't coming back. Brian had never wanted to talk about the end of his life and had no living will. But David, 74, wants for his brother what he wants for himself and his wife, Lisa Benedom, 69, if they were unresponsive and out of options in the cardiac ICU. He wants to help someone. So David lets go. His little brother, he decides, will donate his organs. In 2024, 24,020 people in the United States donated organs for transplantation. Their donations improved far more lives than that, because a single donor can provide multiple organs, and some organs, such as livers and kidneys, can be divided among recipients. Surgeons used these donations to replace a record number of more than 48,000 organs, including 847 pancreases, 3,404 lungs, 4,636 hearts, 11,458 livers, and 28,493 kidneys. Meanwhile, thousands of Americans have removed themselves from donor registries, largely after news reports characterized the organ donation system as no longer safe and effective. Experts call the reports misleading and say the industry is safe, but acknowledge that it does have inherent flaws, including limitations the Benedom family will encounter as they wait for Brian to die. By some metrics, the organ donation and transplantation system in the U.S. does more transplants than that of any other country. Surgeons here perform 27% of all transplants worldwide, even though Americans represent less than 5% of the world's population. Yet, of the news Americans have heard about domestic organ donation in recent years, much has been bad news. Horrifying mistake to take organs from a living person was averted, witnesses say, read an October 2024 headline on NPR.org. A year earlier, WABC-TV Eyewitness News reported, exclusive, New York agency gave bonuses to employees after meeting organ goal, emails show. And in December 2018, CNN reported that a heart was left behind on a Southwest Airlines flight. Anyone who read the full story would have found it more nuanced. The error was the airlines. The heart ultimately arrived in time, and it wasn't bound for transplant. It was to be harvested for its valves. Hyperbolic headlines are a small part of a more complex narrative. But they help sow doubt about a system that saves or improves thousands of lives a year. During the week following the NPR story, there was an increase in the number of people opting out from the National Donate Life Registry, with an average of 170 people removing themselves each day, 10 times more than the same week the year prior. Back in 2020, the Senate Finance Committee sent a letter to the United Network for Organ Sharing, that's UNOS, or I'll call it UNOS, launching a congressional investigation into the U.S. supply chain. UNOS is the private nonprofit organization that manages the transplant system in the U.S. The letter covered a lot of ground. It asked about lapses in patient safety, inadequate oversight by the agencies, and tens of thousands of organs that it claimed were going unrecovered or untransplanted. The lawmakers ran with a sensational version of the CNN story. A heart was left on a plane. In 2022, the committee released a batch of findings from its investigation, unearthing more horror stories, including claims of testing mistakes that had killed some transplant patients and oversight failures that had endangered others. Beyond the damage to registry numbers, the problem with the prevailing narrative that the supply chain is inept, corrupt, and dangerous is that it diverts attention from what may be the most consequential problem with organ donation and transplantation in this country. It's just that that story, a tech story involving a faulty algorithm, is less sensational. Brian Benedom had been on a breathing tube for nearly 3 days. The medical staff have told David that Brian must remain alive to preserve his organs while they look for patients who can receive them. But it's weighing on David and Lisa. They're still looking? Inside a small conference room nearby, Linda Freeman opens her laptop and downloads Brian's medical chart. Freeman works for Sierra Donor Services, one of 56 organ procurement organizations, OPOs, around the country that identify, obtain, and often transport organs to transplant centers. She begins to upload the chart to DonorNet, a national database where potential organs are matched with possible patients. Then she waits. The medical chart is slow to load. Brian is eligible to donate his liver, lungs, and kidneys, but it's complicated. He is older, and in addition to Parkinson's disease, has diabetes. Suddenly, the laptop populates three lists for his liver, his lungs, and his kidneys. Freeman is looking at 5,077 possible matches. So now, she says, scrolling through the long list, the hunt for the home begins. Her job was once simpler. The supply chain used to follow a hub and spoke distribution model, similar to how FedEx operates. Packages first go to regional hubs, which send them to local hubs, which then distribute them to area customers. In the organ donation and transplantation supply chain, OPOs, like the one Freeman works for, would serve as a hub, and the transplant centers in its territory were its customers, who got first dibs on organs before they were offered nationally. Volumes were manageable under this model. Many transplant surgeons received around 4 kidney offers a day. Then, in 2017, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services was sued. The plaintiff, a young woman in New York with a fatal lung disease, argued that the supply chain was unfair. Just across the Hudson River in New Jersey, she would have received a transplant more quickly, but the donor lungs there were primarily for patients in that region, the lawsuit said. Fearing an unfavorable ruling, the federal government preempted the judge and told the officials who run the supply chain to design a replacement. What they came up with, ultimately for all organs, was intended to make the supply chain more equitable. But in trying to solve one problem, it may have exacerbated others. Picture a map of the country. Picture across that map all the hospitals where organs are recovered. Now draw a circle around each hospital. Because of the reforms driven by litigation, every transplant center within a circle now receives offers from the hospital at the center of the circle, which may sound like the FedEx model, except now the circles overlap. It's as if your local FedEx hub is sending you packages, and suddenly all these new hubs you didn't know about are also sending you packages. After a week, you can't get out your front door. This is essentially what's happening to transplant centers with organ offers. They are fielding more calls and more texts about more organs for more donors at more hospitals. A typical transplant coordinator, who filters much of this chaos before it reaches the surgeon, is now spending 91 hours a month evaluating kidney offers, nearly twice the time as before, one study found. And the related workload for surgeons has also increased. I can tell you, it's brutal, says Seth Karp, MD, Surgeon-in-Chief at Vanderbilt University Medical Center in Nashville, Tennessee. When I'm on liver call now, I'm getting calls throughout the night. I used to wake up a couple of times a night, and now my wife sleeps in a different bedroom. Despite this crushing volume, the center isn't doing any additional transplants because of the new allocation system. We're just having to manage all this complexity, Dr. Karp says. Doctors want to match patients with organs that will maximize their life expectancy. So for high-priority patients, generally those who have been waiting the longest, they tend to hold out for organs from young, healthy donors and reject offers from patients like Brian Benedom, which they politely call clinically complex. Clinically complex doesn't mean bad. It just means complex. A kidney damaged from diabetes, for example, often recovers in a new body, but sometimes it does not. A kidney scarred during its journey outside the body could heal with healthy tissue, or it could heal with more scar tissue. This is where medicine becomes slightly an art, says Sumit Mohan, MD, a nephrologist and professor of epidemiology at Columbia University in New York City. Clinicians still need to manage the uncertainty of complex organ offers, he says, and that slows down the process. When centers can manage the uncertainty, a clinically complex organ can revitalize a patient. But often, the centers can't or won't, and these organ offers tumble through the algorithm. In 2024, New England Donor Services, one of the nation's largest OPOs by donor volume, had 369 kidneys declined by transplant centers. They offered each kidney an average of 7,681 times. The consequences are discouraging. In one study of more than 250,000 patients awaiting a kidney transplant, 9.3% of those for whom the centers declined an offer died before they got another offer. As of November 2025, 108,385 people were waiting for a transplant, and every day, 13 on the wait list die. In 2024, the supply chain failed to use 11,849 organs procured for transplantation. For these organs, doctors also have a euphemism: discards. It's been 2 hours and 19 minutes since Freeman initiated the match run on DonorNet, and surgeons have turned down all 35 of Brian Benedom's lung offers. By evening, surgeons for every one of the 3,874 patients matched to his kidneys will have declined those too. But Freeman still has hope for his liver, even though it's already been turned down 421 times. The algorithm now has it before the Mayo Clinic in Arizona, which he says is a good sign. The transplant center there does more liver transplants than any other center in the country, and often takes clinically complex ones like Brian's. Plus, Freeman says, DonorNet is listing 40 possible patients there. Still, she is beginning to feel pressure. She wants to tell Brian's family when they can expect a time of death. She picks up her phone, dials Arizona, and tells them that any patient of theirs who needs a liver can have this one. Now we wait, she says. 38 minutes pass. Freeman calls Arizona again. The center is still reviewing the offer with the surgeon. They'll call back in a few minutes. 23 minutes go by. I'm giving them grace, Freeman says, but at the same time, I need to find a home for this liver. 3 minutes pass. Come on, Arizona, Freeman says. She worries the woman she spoke with will get busy and forget to call her back. She texts the Mayo Clinic seeking updates. She's now thinking they'll need to schedule time soon in the operating room if Arizona says yes to Brian's liver. Her phone rings. Sierra Donner, Freeman says. She scrunches her face in confusion. Sierra Donner, she repeats. Then she hangs up. Spam. Before the United States adopted its system for organ donation and transplantation, there was hardly a system at all, which made news in 1983. That summer, an 11-month-old girl from Texas went into liver failure, and President Ronald Reagan, who learned of the girl's plight from a member of Congress, took to the radio to plead for a donor. He said an Air Force jet was on standby and recited the phone number for an organ bank in Houston. If people needed a transplant in those days, their best bet may have been to make an appeal in the newspaper and hope somebody of stature noticed. But even the president couldn't help the little girl in Texas who died a few months later. In 1984, Congress passed the National Organ Transplant Act, which created a national registry for organ matching that would soon be run by UNOS under federal contract. Today, surgeons are performing more transplants year over year, thanks to the efforts of employees like Freeman. But because of ongoing issues, including the revised algorithm, they are also discarding more organs. Figures compiled by the Organ Procurement and Transplantation Network, OPTN, which oversees UNOS, show an overall growth in annual discards since the group began recording the data in 1988. UNOS has made myriad changes to the matching algorithm since then, and the most recent, Mohan says, has made it dramatically less efficient. It's difficult even for UNOS to assess the impact of its changes, according to a 2021 report from the United States Digital Services, USDS, an agency focused on improving technology used by the federal government. The report argued that the underlying code is fragile and likely at an unmanageable level of complexity. In its investigation, USDS asked whether UNOS had measured the complexity of its code base, and UNOS said it saw no significant value in this analysis. The fact that they have not done even this cursory analysis, USDS said in its report, indicates they have likely never seriously considered moving from their current tech stack, nor do they have any plan to rewrite their code in the future. 32 minutes after the spam call, Freeman dials Arizona. The call gets forwarded, but soon someone calls back. It'll probably be another half hour at least before the surgeon decides, but he's interested. There it is. Given the Arizona Clinic's history of aggressive placement, and given that it has 40 patients waiting a liver, Freeman hangs up feeling optimistic. She turns to a coworker and says, "Get me OR." The next day, down the hall from the OR, David and Lisa Benedom sit next to Brian, preparing to say goodbye. A nurse administers a blood thinner to prevent Brian's blood from clotting and damaging his liver before it can be recovered. The nurse asks David and Lisa if they'd like to leave, but David says they would prefer to stay. And so the nurse begins pulling the breathing tube slowly from Brian's trachea. It makes a sound like water rushing down a drain. Then the room is quiet. Brian, after nearly 70 hours on life support, is untethered. In a room next door, Freeman stands at her laptop and stares at a wall monitor that displays Brian's vitals. They had been stable, but are beginning to swing. Freeman is transmitting the data to the OR, which is on standby. A surgeon from the Arizona Mayo Clinic flew in about an hour earlier, and his stainless steel instruments, scissors, scalpel, forceps are laid out on blue cloth. There is a 60-minute window during which Brian must die for his liver, now oxygen-deprived, to be eligible for donation. 28 minutes in, the heart rate display shows an X, and the respiratory rate display flashes with white letters that spell apnea, which indicates his breathing has stopped. But Brian's heartbeat resumes a few minutes later, and 53 minutes after life support was withdrawn, his heart rate climbs to 132 and then falls back to 93. 2 minutes later, Freeman closes her laptop. Brian isn't going to die in time. Freeman believed that Brian's lungs and kidneys, though not the organs of a young, healthy man, could have improved the lives of the right recipients. But every one of her 3,909 offers was shot down. His liver could have helped someone, too, if circumstances had been different. For the 100 or so other personnel who had mobilized to transplant his liver, staff from the Arizona Mayo Clinic and Mercy San Juan, the contractors who brought a pump to connect to the liver, the lab that ran his test, the circumstances were out of their control. Minutes after Freeman calls it, the Arizona surgeon is gone, driving to the airport. Freeman is packing up too. She's disappointed, but she has charts to catch up on. Critics agree the supply chain must become more efficient. But here in the room with Brian Benedom and all the beeping machines, efficiency could be tantamount to murder. Some who read news reports like NPR's 2024 story worry that organ procurement officials let patients die so they can retrieve their organs, or that officials will take organs from living patients. In reality, about half of patients like Brian do not die within the time necessary to donate their organs. And all that officials like Freeman can do is wait, watching the clock and the patient's vitals. So officials must manage what they can. The allocation algorithm is an obvious place to start. The DonorNet company computer system could be optimized to rapidly allocate at-risk organs before they are too damaged for transplantation, and more precisely match organs to recipients, encouraging surgeons to more often say yes, researchers say. Richard N. Formica, M.D., the former president of OPTN's board of directors, says the group is transitioning to a new model designed to rank waitlisted patients based on multiple factors, other than primarily by how long they have been waiting. These changes are intended to allocate organs based on a more nuanced criteria, theoretically facilitating better matches that surgeons would be more likely to accept. And until the algorithm is improved, transplant centers can filter out DonorNet offers they won't use, allowing coordinators like Freeman to comb lists faster. UNOS has already started implementing this through a tool called Offer Filters, designed to automatically filter out offers that are not a good match. These changes, of course, are no balm for David and Lisa Benedom. They are devastated that Sierra Donor Services couldn't recover Brian's liver. They know the narrative that's out there. They want people to know that organ donation is safe. I don't want to discourage people from being organ donors, Lisa says. Brian would eventually die 2 days later. His liver, his lungs, and both his kidneys would be cremated with him. If you are interested, here is how to become a donor. Most donated organs, about 80%, do not go to waste. They save thousands of lives every year. Anyone over the age of 18, regardless of medical history, can sign up to be a donor. While you're still alive, you can donate some organs and tissues, including one of your kidneys, part of your liver and lungs, skin and bone after certain surgeries, and blood, of course. For information on living organ donation, visit organdonor.gov. To become an organ donor after your death, you can, 1, register online. visit registerme.org to add yourself to the National Registry, or use the interactive map tool at organdonor.gov to find your state form. 2, you can sign up in person. Complete your registration during any Department of Motor Vehicles transaction, including renewing your license, registering a vehicle, or registering to vote. Or 3, use your smartphone. If you have an iPhone, you can elect to be a donor in the Health app, which submits your choice to a national computer program system. However you sign up, it's important to share your decision to donate with your family. This makes your choice clear, helps prepare your loved ones, and ensures your wishes are carried out as you intended. We've now run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest. Today's program is supported by the Durham Lions Club. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Diane Edelman, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Reader's Digest is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.